Advertising your business with GCN is simple, effective,
and more affordable than you might think.
Visit advertise.gcnlive.com for more info. Take your business to the next level.
Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
So, folks, we'll get to our special guest, Dr. Simon Young, shortly, and he's going to talk about the supernatural and about fairy lore. So those of you who are sick and tired of our emphasis on flying saucers will feel relief this weekend. But before we do that, last week we had Linda Powell, and she wrote a book called Against the Odds, a biography, and possibly the first one ever, of Major Donald Kehoe, a key figure in the early UFO movement. Now, I should tell you, those of you who have tried to hear the episode and our website stalls out a bit, it's because our server has been slammed since this episode went up. So that's possibly one of the reasons. Also, I was surprised before we did the show that so many people out there knew who Kehoe was. What do you think about it, Tim?
It does. It really surprises me. I mean, I can see why someone like you, naturally, because you knew Kehoe, someone like me who's been researching this subject for years and years and years, but it surprises me that so many people still remember who Kehoe is, and it's gratifying to know that as well.
I hope that means also people will learn from the experience, because Kehoe was a pretty decent guy when I met him a couple of times, but also he could be very polarizing and he could be very adamant in his viewpoints, and not everybody accepted that. They felt he was too restrictive, and also, frankly, the guy died in the 1980s and people just forgot about him. Let's talk to our guest, Dr. Simon Young. Simon, before we go on, have you ever talked about UFOs, or is that not on your radar?
UFOs are on my radar, but I certainly don't have the kind of experience that you guys have.
Ever see one?
I did, actually. This is one of my very few supernatural experiences, at least I think of it as supernatural. When I was 16 or 17, I come from the South Pennines, which is a UFO hotspot in the UK, and I was out with some friends, and we were watching the opposite side of the valley, and there was just this extraordinary light that zipped around in a way that was just impossible.
Can you tell us more?
It was dusk, and we were sitting around and chatting, and on the hillside opposite us, there was a big tower called Studley Pike that was built after the Napoleonic Wars in the UK as a kind of war memorial. It's this huge tower, which is maybe, I don't know, say 100, 120 metres high. And we were watching across the valley that was about half a mile away, and the light started to buzz around. And at first, this was obviously long before drones, we're talking about 30 years ago. At first, the friend said, oh, it must be a helicopter. But just the way it was moving, it was now dark, so all we could see was this really quite tiny light, was that it was moving both behind and in front of the tower. And so it was something that made quite an impression on me at the time. And studying fairies over the years, I've often thought of the way that my friends saw this as a UFO, but if we'd seen it in the 1700s, we would have talked about fairy lights.
That takes us to something I'm interested in here. I don't know much about fairy lore. I remember the TV show True Blood about vampires, and they did go into a fairyland from time to time where time was at a different rate. Now, before we get deep into your interest, is that something found in fairy lore, or did the TV writers just make it all up?
I think it's a, politely we could say, it's a bit of a manipulation of what's going on in fairy lore. But certainly in fairy time, there is this idea that you enter the world of the fairies, you dance around for 10 minutes, you go home, and 40 years have passed. And so you can think of it perhaps as a version of lost time within UFO lore, this idea that time starts to distort. It almost is a different dimension in that respect. And that's something that you get in lots of different supernatural traditions. And the best example of it, the most haunting example, is the man who spends an hour dancing with the fairies, comes home, finds there's a different family living in his house because 60 or 70 years have gone by, and then as he has that realization, he just turns to dust because time inevitably takes its toll.
It's interesting here when you talk about time differences. A very famous comic book and movie character, Buck Rogers, was in a sense a time traveler. He goes to sleep or he goes unconscious in a cave. He wakes up. It's 500 years later, but he's no older. Ever hear of Buck Rogers, Simon?
Buck Rogers was just before my time. So when I was growing up, I was getting cast-off comic books, and there were references on TV, but it was a little bit before my time. But as far as time travelling of that sort, you get a very similar thing with fairy lore. Again, there is this idea that we have this different world that's going along at a different speed from ours. And sometimes you have lovely manipulations of this, where everything has to be a mirror of our own world. So if it's winter here, it's summer there. If it's summer there, it's winter here. If it's a good harvest here, it's a bad harvest there, and so on and so forth.
How did you get interested in fairy lore?
Well, so I grew up in the British countryside, and I've always had, let's say, a loving relationship with the countryside. I still today live in the country, and for me it's really important to go out for an hour's walk, a couple of hours walk a day. And I think that from an early age, I just had this interest in the environment around me, the woods particularly, the moors. And so there was maybe this sense that fairy lore was connected to this, that the fairies were in some sense the voices of the environment around us. And perhaps we can come on to talk about this a little bit later. When I went to university, I was a medievalist. I did medieval studies. In fact, my doctorate is in medieval studies. But towards the end of my doctorate, I became really very ill. And I had a couple of very rough years. And when I came out the other side, I just wasn't really prepared to go back to studying what I had been dealing with before: Irish saints' lives, Welsh saints' lives, Italian saints' lives. I had a sense of nausea about it all. And so at that point, I picked up one of my interests from my teenage years that were fairies. And I started to look at that quite seriously. And since then, the best part of a decade, well, more than a decade, what, 12 years have gone by since I started studying folklore and the supernatural in its own right, and since I started to write on the subject.
Interesting, fascinating. Now, the other thing, of course, is if you're studying historical records, how do you put together stories of the supernatural? I mean, nowadays, an event could occur on live television, and 5 minutes later, they can't agree what it is. So how do you figure out what happened 300 years ago?
Well, with enormous skepticism is my answer, because you can imagine that it's much easier in that period just to make stuff up. And this is what frequently happens. And what I particularly am fascinated by are episodes that are big enough that they're recorded by various people at the same time. And I'll just give you an example of this that I recently had to deal with, which doesn't actually concern fairies directly. This is the so-called Wesley family poltergeist. I don't know if you've ever come across this case, but this is the family of John Wesley, the founder of Methodism. And this family had a very serious poltergeist case. It was, let's say, a difficult family, a boiling family underneath the surface. And so just the kind of place you would expect to find poltergeist phenomenon. And what's fascinating is that there were, I think, seven members of the family.
Simon, before we go on, we need to do a quick break, and we'll continue with this story of poltergeist with Gene, Simon, Tim. You're in
the Paracast.
Hey, listeners. I want you to have the entire Paracast experience, so I'd like to tell you about After the Paracast. After the Paracast is an exclusive feature for subscribers to the Paracast Plus. With After the Paracast, you never know what's going to happen next. After the Paracast features color commentary, special interviews, and further conversations with Paracast guests. With Paracast Plus, you can download a very special enhanced version of the Paracast also. We do offer exclusive music, videos, and more features are coming. To get more info about subscribing, please visit theparacast.plus. Once again, theparacast.plus. Prices are just $1.50 a week, less than a cup of coffee at your local convenience store. Check out theparacast.plus to learn more about Paracast Plus.
It's easy to see. We're being conned by the institutions we used to trust. The mainstream media is distracting us with meaningless headlines instead of focusing on the harsh realities facing American families. We all know something big is coming, and that's why so many folks are preparing. They're becoming more self-reliant by investing in emergency food storage from My Patriot Supply. My Patriot Supply is the nation's largest emergency preparedness company, and they make it easy for you to prepare. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and secure some emergency food kits. There's a dozen to choose from that contain tasty breakfasts, lunches, and dinners, averaging 2,000 calories per day. Get at least one food kit for each family member. My Patriot Supply also sells large solar generators, gravity-powered water filtration systems, heirloom seeds for your garden, and survival gear. Order by 3 p.m. and your items will ship that same day. Time is short. Prepare today. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com. MyPatriotSupply.com.
When it comes to vaping, the truth can get clouded. So let's make it clear. Vaping is not safe for youth.
Because vaping can put microscopic particles into your lungs.
And dangerous things like metals into your body.
And nicotine, which can harm a person's brain development through their mid-20s.
With appealing flavors, high nicotine levels, and lots of promotion on social media.
Many kids think vaping is harmless, but it's not.
So talk to your kids about the risks of vaping.
Because when you talk, they hear you.
If you're concerned about the power grid and want to generate your own supply of off-grid electricity, this will be the most important message you'll hear this year. Here's why. We now have a small number of solar generators back in stock. These emergency backup systems provide life-saving backup power when you need it most. And unlike gas generators, solar generators run quietly, emit no dangerous fumes, and produce an endless supply of free electricity from the sun. Whether it's wildfires, dangerous weather, power grid issues, or just getting off the grid, you'll never have to suffer through painful power outages again. Even better, all this week, radio listeners get over $700 in free off-the-grid bonuses, too. Go to MySolarBackup.com to learn more and check availability. That's MySolarBackup.com. Look for the free report, Crisis Cooling, how to make absolutely sure your meat, milk, and medicines stay safe and cool in any power outage. Yours free at MySolarBackup.com.
Do you know someone with a drug or alcohol problem? Get help now. Insurance may cover everything. Stop the drug and alcohol nightmare. Call 800-284-0523. Learn how through the Family Medical Leave Act, you can leave your job without losing your job. Locations everywhere. Get immediate help for drug and alcohol problems. Call now. 800-284-0523. 0523. 800-284-0523.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com.
The supernatural, fairy lore, on the agenda. Dr. Simon Young joins us. And you were immersed in telling us a poltergeist story. And we had to rudely interrupt you because I am, of course, very rude. But no disrespect, please continue.
I was just saying that for me, it's a fascinating case of how you deal with the supernatural, because five different members of the family give us what effectively a witness account. And I think that's what I look for in the supernatural. I try and find examples where there are a series of people who can bring together their experiences and help us understand what's going on. So I am skeptical, but at the same time, I love those cases where you get different witness accounts. Sure, it's the same in UFO lore. I mean, some of the most fascinating cases are the cases where 30 different people across a US county get to see something in the sky. Their experiences correlate.
When you're looking at fairy lore, is this something that is or was initially restricted to, say, like the British Isles, or are there similar stories worldwide?
Yes, fairy is just a word of convenience. It's a word that we started using because it's the one that the English language has given us. But when we talk about fairy lore, we're really talking about similar experiences in all parts of the globe. And in fact, you would be very hard pressed to find any culture that doesn't have some kind of parallel to fairy lore. And the typical model that you find is this idea of the notion of parallel societies. And this is something that perhaps you can argue is echoed in UFO lore as well. But the notion that I live in this little village, and over the hill there is a fairy village. And in my village we go hunting, and in the fairy village they go hunting. Now, we in Britain happen to use the word fairy, or at least most of Britain historically. But in other countries they just had other words. I mean, in Gaelic-speaking Ireland they talk about the she, which is the Gaelic word for their equivalent of fairies. I'm talking to you from a house in Italy. In Italy we have folletti and other creatures that fulfill a similar function.
At the beginning of the program, we use the word supernatural to describe this, but during the days, during the heyday, did people consider fairies supernatural, or did they consider them physical, like we are, or some from column A, some from column B?
Right, so I've struggled a lot with this question over the years, and there are people who give different answers. It's really an excellent question, because I think it gets to the heart of what fairies are. What I would say is that business of fairies being physical or not physical is probably a fairly modern way of looking at it. And I think the way that historically people would have expressed it, and the difference is arguably important, is they would have said fairies were magical. So it's not that fairies were physical or not physical, but they had these magic powers, and so they could appear, they could disappear. So we would probably express this by saying that fairies were not physical. But in previous times, I think the way that people would have looked at it is whether fairies were magical or not. They had these powers that allowed them to phase in and to phase out of what I suppose we would call our dimension.
Well, and there was also, I mean, there was this huge hierarchy of different beings, or, you know, however you'd want to describe them, from angels to demons to what have you, to us. And the good folk had their niche as well.
Yeah, that's exactly it. So they have their niche within the system, but the system is much wider. And so if you meet someone in Britain in 1400 who's had a supernatural experience, it might be with a fairy, a member of the good folk, but it might also be different parts of the supernatural spectrum. It might be an angel, so a figure sent from God. It might be one of what we today call the solitary supernatural, so ghosts, bogies, shape changers, special light forms, all these different things. And I guess for myself, studying the supernatural over the years, I've slowly come to the conclusion that the supernatural changes surprisingly little century by century. What changes is our terminology. And this is why you're so right to jump on the word fairy and to say, oh my goodness, you know, how universal is that? I would say fairy is just a local take on this from Britain, but whatever country you go in, whatever age you go on, whether we zip ahead 200 years to our first colonies on Alpha Centauri, personally, I think you will always have the supernatural, and the supernatural will be relatively similar. It will be the terms that we use that change.
How marvelous is it, though, that here we are in the 21st century, still talking about things that were going on hundreds of years ago with the same kind of, well, I mean, for us, I mean, you know, we're questioning what was going on, but at the time, I mean, there was no questions. I mean, you know, they were out there and, you know, you had to deal with it.
Yeah, that's right. We live in a surprisingly skeptical age in some respects, whereas when you go back into, say, the Middle Ages and you look at the way people process these experiences, the argument wasn't about whether the experiences exist or not, which is, of course, the way we process things today. The argument about was about whether these experiences were diabolical or whether they were something else. And, of course, the Christian way of looking at things was pretty much anything from the spirit world was diabolical unless it could be shown to come from God.
Well, that's also part
now,
of it, too.
Speaking of Christian,
oh, go ahead. Go ahead, Tim.
No, finish your thought, King.
Now, it's interesting how you portrayed the attitude there. All these events are real. It's just, what are they? Nowadays, we have to separate the real from the supposed fantasy. But also, I noticed more specifically about UFOs, and we could see if there's a connection, that some people with certain religious beliefs believe that UFOs are somehow demonic.
Yeah, I've come across several of these references, and of course you get it even more in ghost studies or poltergeist studies. I had a phase of my life when I was in my late teens where I lived with an evangelical family, and I remember a very serious discussion about how Father Christmas was diabolical. And so you can pretty much interpret lots of different folk in this way. But I would say that today that is definitely, well, perhaps I'm wrong, tell me, but I would say that's in remission. And that the biggest argument of our time is whether this thing is real or not. And that's been something that's perhaps been the case for 200, 300 years now. Whereas when you go back to that prior time, the supernatural was widely accepted, not least because you couldn't be a Christian or you couldn't be Muslim, you couldn't be Jewish unless you accepted the supernatural.
We have more on the supernatural with Simon, Jean, Tim. You're in
the Paracast.
You are listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Hi, I'm Dr. Joel Wallach, the Dead Doctors Don't Lie guy. There's no reason why you shouldn't live to be at least 100 and have a great time getting there. And I'm going to give you a free copy of my lecture that tells you exactly how to do it. In fact, after you've lived a long and healthy life, there should be only two documents in your medical chart, a birth certificate and a death certificate. I'm Dr. Wallach with a warning. If you have a 4-inch medical chart, if you take prescription drugs for high cholesterol, high blood pressure, arthritis, joint pains, and other health issues, the medical profession is failing you. They're using you for an ATM machine. My free lecture is going to reveal what pharmaceutical companies don't want you to know. There's been groundbreaking research and discoveries on how to effectively treat or eliminate over 900 different diseases naturally. And it's all in my free lecture called Deadly Recipe. So call toll-free 1-855-79-YOUNG. Again, that's toll-free 1-855-79-YOUNG. 1-855-79-YOUNG.
USA News Update. Aftershocks still being felt after a rare 4.8 magnitude earthquake hitting the northeast of the epicenter, Lebanon, New Jersey, 50 miles from New York City. It's been 139 years since New York City felt anything like this, and it's been 240 years since a quake this strong hit New Jersey. The last time was in the year 1783. For a period of time, there were ground stops Friday at the New York area airports, Newark, New Jersey, LaGuardia, LaGuardia and JFK as runways were checked for cracks, more than 600 flights were delayed and more than 30 were canceled. President Biden making a trip to Baltimore on Friday to tour the collapsed Francis Scott Key Bridge.
Most importantly to people of Maryland, I'm here to say your nation has your back, and I mean it. Your nation has your back.
And I'm Laura Winters, USA News.
Get healthy, not high, with 100% pure CBD powerful natural pain relief from Veterans Vitality. GCN listeners, have you ever thought about how CBD may help you? I'm sure you have heard about the many benefits of CBD. Well, here's your opportunity to try before you buy. Created by veterans and for everyone who deserves better choices, our CBD is derived from organic hemp, grown in the USA, and third-party tested. Veterans Vitality CBD saves you as much as 25 to 50% over our competition, and a portion of all sales is contributed to veteran nonprofits and events. Many of our customers have experienced improved quality of life, help with anxiety, PTSD, and overall well-being. Our products do not contain THC. They are safe, non-addictive, effective, and 100% legal. GCN listeners, get your free trial bottle of premium CBD by simply paying shipping and handling at GCNFreeCBD.com. That's GCNFreeCBD.com. Again, GCNFreeCBD.com. Offered by Veterans Vitality Premium CBD.
Wellness and self-care doesn't have to be complicated. So keep it simple and take good care of yourself with Sunny Bay heating pads. Our heating pads soothe pains in the neck, back, and shoulders while relaxing muscles and increasing blood circulation. Sunny Bay heating pads have always been made in the USA and hand-filled to perfection with the highest quality materials. Sunny Bay heating pads are the perfect wellness gift for loved ones or yourself. See all of our high-quality products at sunny-bay.com, including heated body pads, neck pillows, heated neck and body wraps, and our stress-reducing lavender line. They're all affordable, durable, and in stock now and ready for immediate shipping direct from sunny-bay.com. Read our trusted, authentic, and real reviews at sunny-bay.com or just search for Sunny Bay Heating Pad. To your good health and wellness from Sunny Bay.
Hi, this is Don Ecker, and you are tuned into the Paracast. Let me tell you what, you're going to hear stuff here that you probably won't hear anywhere else. Hear that, George Snorri?
Of course, nowadays when you see a strange creature, it must be a gray alien. But that goes back to something as we get into case histories and everything. Over the centuries, have we seen things and interpreted them in accordance with our upbringing or our expectations?
This is something I've looked a lot at and I'm really, really curious about. My sense of this is that we are greatly influenced by social messages about the supernatural. And I'll give you an example of this from the world of fairy, and then please, by all means, counter with some examples from the world of UFOs. But when you have descriptions of fairies from the, for instance, the 1600s, the 1700s, the 1800s, and we have hundreds of these experiences, you will never, never have an experience where a fairy has wings. Just fairies are described in different ways, but they never have wings. However, when you move into the early 20th century, this starts to change. And by the time you get to fairy experiences from between the wars, it starts to become fairly common for people to see fairies with wings. And then by the time you're after the Second World War, it is, I would say, the norm. Now, that's an example of how we can trace one supernatural form through the centuries. And yet there is a great deal of change. And I imagine the same thing is true of UFOs. I'm from the little I've read and heard about it, at least.
I think the whole fairies with wings started, was it during the Victorian period? So the illustrations that were coming out at the times.
Well, I think illustrations is spot on as being the important point. And again, in my studies of the supernatural, my impression is that illustrations are worth 10,000 words. It's illustrations, and more recently, of course, actual videos, films that change how we perceive things. The story with Fairy Wings is that a weird cabal of British artists based out of London in the late 1700s took this revolutionary step in painting fairies with wings on. This was something completely new. By the time you get to the mid-Victorian period, 70, 80 years later, it was normal in children's books to show fairies as being small, winged creatures. And then by the time you get to the Great War, you start to have the first people having experiences, actually seeing fairies with wings on, whereas this had been something completely alien before. Of course, for anyone interested in the supernatural, and once more, I imagine this applies to UFO lore as well, you have this kind of question. Why is it that we see things like this? Now, someone who was completely rationalist like Richard Dawkins would say, well, it's obvious that this is all in our minds. And so, of course, it's what society tells us these things should look like. Someone who was, let's say, more moderate, but still relatively skeptical, would say, well, if the supernatural exists, we clearly filter the supernatural. We have some kind of filter in terms of how we experience these things. And then someone who is perhaps much more open to these experiences would say, well, no, what's actually happening is the supernatural is taking the forms that we would expect. Now, which of those three options, I'm not sure, is the one that makes the most sense. I really don't know. But what I would go to the wall with is that the social experiences, social pressures, above all illustrations, the things we see, seem to condition how we see the supernatural. Make of that what you will.
You know, when you talk about different interpretations of the supernatural, I also think of the Peter Pan story. The modern image, Tinkerbell is a tiny feminine creature who has wings, except when in the movie Hook, she grows up briefly and becomes Julia Roberts. And then, though, you have Neverland, which is like another dimension with a different kind of time where people do not grow old. They seem to live forever. So that's taking a whole bunch of these legends, putting them together for the story.
Yeah, absolutely. But I think Tinkerbell is really important in terms of fairy lore, because as much as this poor creature irritates lots of people, for many people in the early 20th century, the mid-20th century, she was their gateway to what fairies are. And it's interesting that in the collection I've made over the past 10 years or so, called The Fairy Census of Fairies' Experiences, that again and again people use Tinkerbell as a point of reference. She looked like Tinkerbell, but a little bit bigger. She had the same kind of wings. For me, this is another example of a powerful archetype or metaphor that's been created in our culture, and that then there's a feedback loop, that the supernatural experiences we have start to feed off what is seen.
Yeah, it's interesting that you have these reports of people seeing these creatures with wings, and usually with no real prior knowledge to the history of fairy lore, with the exception of what they've seen in popular media. So it does kind of make sense to me that that would be their interpretation of whatever happened to them.
Yeah, absolutely. It's the point of reference that they have. And I suppose there you start to come into another problem, is that often these experiences that I collect that people have had, really very particular, let's say, rather unique experiences. For example, I had one extraordinary experience from Central Ireland, where a young man and his friend had come out of a nightclub and they were waiting to go home. Neither of them had had any alcohol or drugs. And they saw what was apparently something like a web of light that formed between two poles. And at one point, the young man, who would have been in his late teens, actually bent down and took a little bit of this almost light substance in his hands. And he didn't know what to make of it. he decided that this was a fairy experience. And for anyone who is limited to Tinkerbell, this will seem very strange. But of course, this is always the problem that we have with the supernatural. So many experiences don't fit particularly cleanly into the Sasquatch, UFO, ghost, fairy box. And so in the end, you're left searching for a category. And it's, for me, one of the fascinating things about fairy experiences that are sent to me, I sometimes think, well, why did you think that was a fairy experience?
Well, that was actually one of your questions, wasn't it, on the fairy census? You know, what made you think that this was a fairy experience?
Right. I have some regrets about how I wrote the fairy census, because, of course, when you start a big longitudinal survey that's going to last a few decades, you've got to get the stuff right at the beginning. And that question there is one of my few non-regrets, because time and time again, it's been able to try and give some context to why people thought this strange thing that happened to me was a fairy experience, as opposed to, say, a Sasquatch experience or a UFO experience.
Well, that's just it. I mean, if you took a lot of these experiences that you recorded in the fairy census and took them back 300 years ago, and, you know, how would people then have reported it or thought about it afterwards?
I think this is where, for anyone who is fixated on the details of the supernatural, things get very depressing. That so many of those experiences in the fairy census simply would not have made sense to a man or woman in 1600, say.
Hmm.
They probably would have said, in lots of the cases, I mean, just think, for example, the idea that you have winged fairies. Well, fairies don't have wings. This is what the woman would say back in 1600. And also, fairies are normally the size of 10-year-old boys. Why is this fairy the size of a butterfly?
We have to fly away for a second here. And then we'll be back with Simon, Gene, and Tim. You're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNLive.com today.
If you love mysteries, you'll love these two books by Tim R. Swartz and Sean Castile. In Mimics, The Others Among Us, you'll learn about the strange beings that can look like us, but are not. In Alien Artifacts, Incredible Evidence of Exotic Material from UFO Encounters, you'll see the hard evidence of UFOs that has been ignored or even hidden. These books will definitely blow your mind, and both are now available on Amazon.com.
First came Attack of the Rockoids, and it was a critically acclaimed success. And now there is The Coming of the Protectors. A former military intelligence man is contacted by a space woman in a dream. A dream that turns out to be a nightmare, because evil forces on her distant planet are planning to conquer the Earth. This is gripping science fiction of the classic kind. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors. Find out more at Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids, R-O-C-K-O-I-D-S.
Complement your health with hemp-derived cannabinoid oil. We've always believed that the closer to Earth, the better it is for our bodies. Our hemp-derived cannabinoid oil is phytocannabinoid-rich, full-spectrum, and organically grown. Finally, hemp made easy, clean, and effective. GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203. That's right, we cut through the red tape. It's now available at GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203.
What if you could cut your heating bills this winter with your existing wood-burning fireplace and not spend thousands doing it? You can with Great Wall of Fire Fireplace Grates. Our U.S.-patented, made-in-America Wall of Fire Grates increase fireplace efficiency, eliminate fireplace smoke problems, and come with a 30-day money-back guarantee. See our grates in action and get free shipping from walloffire.com or call 800-274-7364. Fireplace heat without fireplace smoke. Walloffire.com.
Hi, I'm Dr. Joel Wallach, the Dead Doctors Don't Lie guy, and there's no reason why you shouldn't live to be at least 100 and have a great time getting there and I'm going to give you a free copy of my lecture that tells you exactly how to do it. In fact, after you've lived a long and healthy life, there should be only two documents in your medical chart, a birth certificate and a death certificate. I'm Dr. Wallach with a warning. If you have a 4-inch medical chart, if you take prescription drugs for high cholesterol, high blood pressure, arthritis, joint pains, and other health issues, the medical profession is failing you. They're using you for an ATM machine. My free lecture is going to reveal what pharmaceutical companies don't want you to know. There's been groundbreaking research and discoveries on how to effectively treat or eliminate over 900 different diseases naturally, and it's all in my free lecture called Deadly Recipe. So call toll-free 1-855-79-YOUNG. Again, that's toll-free 1-855-79-YOUNG. 1-855-79-YOUNG.
I need answers to my tax questions. Where can I find them?
Need answers? Try our interactive tax assistant on irs.gov/ITA. Simply select your tax questions, provide your information, and it gives you answers. Also, check our help and resources page and try our online tax map. 5,000 tax topics from A to Z. Plus, you can access forms, publications, in a variety of formats.
Anyone can fall victim to moving fraud. Know your rights and responsibilities.
There was never really a valid contract.
Movers must always give written estimates.
I was bound to an estimate, but it was after the fact.
Be sure that any document is complete before signing it and that it includes information to determine the final charges.
It was a version that I had not seen before.
Visit protectyourmove.gov to download a free moving fraud prevention guide. Search for registered movers and view their complaint histories. Move with confidence.
Hi, this is Tracy Torme, screenwriter-producer. You're listening to Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
I guess the various images of fairies. Go on, Simon, please.
Yeah, so they would have had real problems processing this information. And back in 1600, the easy way to deal with this is just to say, oh, it was a demon. Because that's what you did with weird supernatural experiences that didn't fit then. And one of the things that I found fascinating about fairy lore, as I've recorded in the fairy census, is I start to wonder whether fairy lore is not a kind of miscellany for all the experiences that don't fit elsewhere. So yes, there are the Tinkerbell figures. I was walking through the gloaming and I saw this beautiful 3-inch woman who flew up to me and said hello, this kind of thing. But there were also these weirder experiences that are clearly supernatural in some way, but that can't easily fit elsewhere. And so often they get fairified in this way. And I think that for anyone taking the long view with the supernatural, you have to accept this material for what it is. And you have to recognize that it's plasmic. It's constantly changing in front of us. You know, it doesn't do to get too impatient with witness accounts and the same, just because they don't happen to conform to our narrow cultural ideas of what different forms of the supernatural are. Does that make sense?
I am old and naive, of course. So I kind of think that if someone sees a strange thing, I don't want to pigeonhole it into something. I want to know, what did you see? Tell us in your own words what you think it was, or what did it look like? Not, was it a tiny fairy? Did it have wings? Was it a triangular UFO, etc.? Or, like I said, maybe I'm naive.
I have a lot of sympathy with that, and that, of course, is the ideal. But I suspect most of us would, to some extent, seed. And here you have lots of interesting psychological phenomena that start to kick in. And my favourite is this idea of what's called secondary elaboration. Secondary elaboration is you have an experience and that you are programmed to try and make sense of that experience. So, of course, pigeonholing, I agree, isn't good. And ideally, we wouldn't pigeonhole. But we're human and that's what we do, because that's how we try and make sense of things. And as soon as we choose a pigeonhole for our experience, then you can imagine this is the classic moment. We start to add details. We start to forget inconvenient things. And this is where our memories become, let's say, less trustworthy. And one piece of advice, very friendly advice, I would give to anyone who has a UFO experience, a Sasquatch experience, is to do just what you said, to try and get the experience written down as quickly as possible in an unadulterated form, and then just put it on your word processor, close it away somewhere safe, and at least then, in 5 years or 10 years afterwards, when you want to go back and report what happened, you have some kind of point of reference which to some extent stops that process of pigeonholing and the sanding down of rough edges. I wish, for example, I'd done that with my UFO experience that I described at the beginning. But instead, there is this, 30, 35-year-old chain of memories just being passed from day to day and, I imagine, slowly manipulated.
Well, speaking of manipulating memories, I know I've recently told a lot about my early encounters with people in the UFO field. And I got a few of the dates reversed. And I insisted I was right until I looked up the printed record of some of the magazines online and said, oh, okay, that's when this happened, that's when that happened. But it's common, even if you sat down when it happened, for two different people to have two different versions of what they think they saw.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's, personally for me, it's one of the most frightening parts of studying the supernatural, just how unreliable human impressions and human memories are. I mean, for instance, this isn't to do with the supernatural, but clearly it's related and it has a big effect on our society. Our entire legal system is based on witnesses. And yet when you look at the supernatural and look at the way that people screw up witness accounts and their own experiences, and we can demonstrate that things were not as were remembered, I find it absolutely terrifying that someone is put on death row or that someone is sent to prison for life on the basis of sometimes very fleeting encounters. And one thing I've taken to doing, and I would invite your listeners to try this just for the hell of it, is just constantly testing my memory against things I've seen and focusing in on the things I get wrong. And in one respect, it's very... It leaves you a little bit sad because you realize the limits of your memory. But on the other hand, you start to get a sense of how plastic memory is, and you start to be able, I think, to see the world in a more careful way, let's say.
Now, when you talk about memories, I think of the discussions we've had in the PowerCast, particularly with an earlier co-host, Chris O'Brien, where we talk about indigenous races and oral memories, where they're transferred orally from father to son to grandson, etc. And supposedly this oral tradition involves training to get the information right. But if we can't agree what happened 10 minutes ago, how can oral tradition have any value?
Yeah, absolutely. The history gives us contradictory signals here. So on the one hand, we have examples of memories just being distorted out of shape within, as we've already talked about, within days, months, years of an event taking place. But of course we do have, and maybe Chris referred to some of these studies, there are these remarkable accounts where non-literate indigenous peoples seem to have had traditions that recall events from hundreds, but even thousands of years before. And one classic study of this is traditions relating to Tasmania. The idea that Tasmania, of course, this large Australian island, was part of the mainland. And it was. And it's been suggested that that was something that was caught in oral memory and transmitted. There are accounts of volcanoes going off in North America that are also allegedly caught in oral tradition. And I think the way I try and make sense of this, at least, is we're probably quite good at the simple fact of big traumatic events. But if you're expecting details, then human memory is not great.
So long and short is, a lot of things have happened in our history that we haven't a clue about.
Yeah, I think it's depressing. And again, this is where you have to hope there are lots of different witnesses. I mean, the classic first year university course assignment for history students is find a battle, find 10 different people who fought in that battle and wrote about what happened, and then compare. It's a very disorienting experience because in some cases you start to think, was this even the same event?
Did you find in your own research that, especially when it came to various names like Bugert, things like that, that they have a tendency to continue down through the centuries, especially in the British Isles?
Right, so as a historian, if someone had said this to me a decade ago, I would have smiled and said, I don't think so. But again, experience has taught me modesty here. I took for granted, because as a historian I'm used to this, that ideas and memories would just change. And what has flabbergasted me studying folklore is how often, exactly what you say, that you have a hook that can be a name, like, say, Boggart, that exists in tradition. And if you go back, as far as our records go back, which are usually 200, 300, 400, 500 years, you have the same legends, which are repeated again and again. And for me, this came as a little bit of a surprise, because this goes against some of the points I was talking about before. But clearly, these general structures of the supernatural, ideas do remain the same. And so, yeah, absolutely. I would acknowledge that. And I've had several slaps in the face over the last few years, being amazed to find a source from 1550, which is almost identical to a source from 1850, where there is no possibility of contact between the two sources.
So we have a commonality here where there is a core truth or level of accuracy that does transfer from generation to generation and more. Simon, Gene, Tim, you're in
the Pentecast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNLive.com today.
Hey, listeners. I want you to have the entire Paracast experience. So I'd like to tell you about After the Paracast. After the Paracast is an exclusive feature for subscribers to the Paracast Plus. With After the Paracast, you never know what's going to happen next. After the Paracast features color commentary, special interviews, and further conversations with Paracast guests. With Paracast Plus, you can download a very special enhanced version of the Paracast also. We do offer exclusive music, videos, and more features are coming. To get more info about subscribing, please visit theparacast.plus. Once again, theparacast.plus. Prices are just $1.50 a week, less than a cup of coffee at your local convenience store. Check out theparacast.plus to learn more about Paracast Plus.
Are you paying too much for term life insurance? There's a tremendous price war among the major term life companies. Rates have dropped dramatically in the past 2 years. For example, a man aged 45 non-tobacco user, $1 million of coverage is only $75 per month, level for the next 10 years. Or a man aged 50 non-tobacco user can buy $500,000 of coverage for a monthly premium of only $110. Guaranteed not to change for the next 20 years. That's right, level rates for 20 years. And if you're a smoker, we have great rates for you as well. At the Term Lifeline, we specialize in policies of $500,000 and above. So if you're looking for new or replacement term life insurance, call right now for a free quote.
Rates and availability may vary by state. Sample rate quotes are based on preferred non-tobacco underwriting exam required to qualify.
800-430-1891. 800-430-1891. 800-430-1891. That's 800-430-1891.